and welcome to the Brand Strategy Podcast, a show created to equip you with the inspiration, encouragement, and clarity you need to build the brand of your dreams. I'm your host, Bonnie Bakhtiari, brand designer, strategist, and founder of The Illume Retreat. From sustainable strategy to heartfelt encouragement, each episode is designed to equip you with the tools you need to chase after your dreams. Because you deserve a brand that empowers you to do what you love, connects with your dream clients, and offers a deep sense of fulfillment along the way. So grab a cup of coffee and join me on this journey, won't you? Friends, welcome back to the Brand Strategy Podcast. This week, I am so excited to be chatting with Josh Berger, who happens to be my big brother and also a licensed professional therapist, all about setting clear boundaries and handling difficult clients as entrepreneurs. Because you and I both know we've all worked with those clients who throw us a curveball or who ask for something outside the original project scope or who just don't seem to understand the concept of office hours. And it can be quite stressful. And on top of that, it can be challenging to know how best to navigate that relationship in a way where you're still protecting the integrity of your working relationship. So, Josh, I'm really excited to be chatting with you about this. As always, thanks for joining me, and I'm really looking forward to diving into this conversation.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. I think this is going to be a lot of fun to talk about and definitely a very important subject, particularly as you're trying to figure out how to care for yourself and how to care for your clients both at the same time. So often this can feel like only one person can win in these type of really just rough, tricky situations.
I totally agree with that. I think when I'm kind of looking back on my own experience as an entrepreneur or with my coaching students or with the designers who are part of the Brand Strategy School, my 5-week course for branding professionals, I find that so often when we're working with challenging or sometimes I like to think of it as not so ideal clients, it's really stressful for us because it throws us into this really awkward situation where we feel like we often have to be kind of on the defense where we are fielding questions that we're not expecting, or we are trying to navigate requests that don't really align with our expectations. And it can be very overwhelming. And like you were saying, yeah, it can feel like only one person wins. And so often I think that we're taught that the customer is always right. But what about those situations where the customer isn't right? And maybe they're asking for something that isn't realistic or isn't respectful or isn't something that enables you to truly serve them well. You know, how do we navigate those slippery slopes?
I think one of the first places to start with it is better identifying the reasons why you're experiencing the level of stress that you are with this relationship. So there's plenty of people that you know that will be highly stressful situations, but it's because of them being high functioning and because they're go-getters, they're forthright, they know what they want, they have high expectations, and they're just kind of going and blowing. And that can cause you to really feel like, okay, I got to step it up. I got to be on my A game, which for many of us, the very natural comfort is of comfort. We want to be people that have our system, our rhythms, and things going smoothly and peacefully. And a lot of times, high-intensity clients can bring stress. Now, that's one direction where you may have a difficult client is because you're going to need to be kind of at 100%, but it's not an inappropriate level. They just want you, just like a professional athlete, to bring it all every time. There's other situations which may be because of something's going on in that person's past, deep level of sadness, previous trauma, difficulty in their marriage or relationships that are causing what's called projection. Bonnie, projection is the idea of I am feeling hurting and in turmoil on the inside, so therefore I will make sure that you feel my turmoil. And I project that image on you. So even though what's really going on is about me, I'm going to claim that you're an inefficient colleague or that you're a client that is not healthy or helpful or that I've hired you and you're not filling your end of the bargain when really, objectively, things are going well. But because my internal world is shaded one direction, I'm going to look out at the world and cast blame elsewhere. So that's another type of client. The third type is whenever it's something that, in my opinion, is taking that to another whole level. So this isn't someone that is just in a very deeply set temporary state, but it's where it is so far along that this person really sees chaos and inner turmoil and hardship wherever they go. This is usually when you're talking about that deep level toxicity that we will talk a little bit about, but probably not as much today, because for most of us, I think one of the first two categories is going to be where we find the majority of our clientele.
Right. I get that. So one thing that you were talking about is you were kind of mapping out those different types of challenging people that we can encounter. How do we tell the difference between, let's say, someone who's just going through a rough time and that's why they're being kind of difficult? I think that was the second kind of person you're describing, maybe someone who's projecting or something like that, versus someone who does fit more of those toxic characteristics that you were just talking about in that third description.
So I think whenever you're talking about those third description levels, you're going to notice that this is something that's very unaware for the person you're working with. So for example, a deeply upset person will not apologize to you later or actually check in after they've been a little bit over the top. You will almost never receive an authentic apology from that deeply set toxic person. Whereas the second category, the person that's going through a hard season, usually there's some more self-awareness. There's some more introspection and also kind of checking in with you. You may almost feel like you actually get different sides of that person depending on what mood they're in. And that can be a different level of unhealth, but it also shows you a little bit of redemption of, man, I noticed she got back from her vacation or he got back from his trip. And all of a sudden it wasn't the midnight email that was demanding I get back to them before 8 a.m. Like those kinds of things. So usually those temporary states of hardship, the rough marriage, the tricky things going on at home, whatever is the kind of initial trigger for that, will tend to kind of fluctuate. And so you'll see less consistency of negativity in that environment.
Okay, that makes sense. And I think that there's so many instances where we're working with people and we think it's going really well, and then we hit some kind of speed bump that's not related to the work itself. Like, you know, something happens with their kids or something happens with their health, or like, you know, right now when we're recording this, it's the holiday season and things are crazy. Family comes into town. Like, you know, it's an expensive time of the year. Lots of different stressful situations that can pop up that I feel like can bleed into the relationships and the work that people are doing with others. So with that in mind, how do we on our end potentially protect ourselves or even just draw some kind of line in the sand where we can still serve and go above and beyond and care for our clients who might be going through something, but not in a way where we're getting walked all over or we're miserable?
Yeah. So whenever you're trying to figure out exactly how to set those types of boundaries, I think you have to first start, Bonnie, with the idea of what is a very good job in this situation. So for many of us, we can struggle too much with the phrase of, oh, I want to be excellent, which I think is very often a code for perfectionism or feeling like you need to be all things to all people. But for each person, I advise them to set up what is the good, very good job, well done with whatever position you've been hired for. So for me as a therapist, I'll look through, okay, what does it look like to be a very good therapist when it comes to responding to emails? For me, that's about 24 to 36 hours. That's a range where it's like, okay, this is not an emergency, because for that, someone should call 911, not me. I am not an on-call hospital. And so 24 to 36 hours is a quick enough response time. What does it mean for someone to be able to get in with a therapist in a certain amount of time? I have a number for that. And so even just kind of thinking through based on the truth and accuracy of what is a very good job that you're doing in very practical ways. What I find, Bonnie, for most people is whenever they're dealing with that second category of difficult person is that those boundaries get very blurred and then it feels like it's never good enough. Not because of where you're actually objectively at, but because of that person's emotional state or emotionally unstable state.
Okay. So when I'm thinking through ways to kind of set these boundaries in place, and boundaries, I know we're going to talk a lot about this later in this conversation, but one thing that I want to kind of circle back to is this idea of these more toxic personalities. So if you find yourself working with someone like that, how do we understand a little bit more of, like you were saying earlier, where maybe that lack of self-awareness comes from? What is it about people who are toxic that makes them fall into those tendencies? Or where are those traits and behaviors originating from?
That's a great question. There's been a lot of research done, Bonnie, on what causes those high-level toxic situations. So I'm going to kind of be loosely referring, for those of you that have been in the mental health world, to Access to Personality Disorders, which would be what has become sometimes fairly well heard in our kind of cultural environment of narcissistic traits or borderline traits, antisocial traits, those kinds of things that can just be very, very polarizing. Many people have a few of these traits and are not diagnosable. Honestly, I don't think a diagnosis is as healthy as just better figuring out, okay, where is this coming from and who is this person when they're healthier? So to answer your question, Bonnie, I think there tends to be kind of this infinity loop. So think just like the little symbol of infinity, that kind of sideways eight of different thoughts that tend to feed into each other in a very unhealthy and very devastating way. One of them is the very first rule that any of these traits will have, which is the idea that I, as a person, the thought that I am somehow better, smarter, or more right than other people. Okay. Now that's a thought where there's going to be some truth to it. But if that thought has become fairly universal in my mind, I have developed a narcissistic thought to where I believe that I am going to be the expert and people are only as right as they are in alignment with whatever I believe. So if I think you should have been able to respond at midnight and been able to get back to me by 8 a.m., that's a thought that therefore, because I think it, you need to now adjust to me because I am right. That's that first thought. The second thought that tends to cause these type of originating things is the idea of very, very low empathy. Now, empathy is the idea of not being able to think through how you would feel in that situation, but being able to think and feel what it's like to be in someone else's shoes. That's the empathy idea. For someone that has these very unhealthy thought patterns, almost always they are relatively incapable of actually thinking, man, I wonder what it is like to get a demanding email at midnight. I wonder what it is like for me to change my perspective or ask this person to go the extra mile when they mentioned that they're about to go out of town on vacation. Those questions that many of us that hopefully are trying to be more and more introspective and reflective do not even occur. And so when you're talking, Bonnie, about someone that's on that third category, that more access to personality disorders and struggles, you're talking about someone that normal thoughts like those do not even come up. They do not exist. Often this comes from some form of past hardships, trauma, a very deep, deep level of depression, toxic family environments themselves, where this was seen as the normal. This is just what it is to succeed in the life, or a very dog-eat-dog type growing up experience, where if you don't survive, it's because you couldn't cut it. And so those type of very heart-wrenching environments often do kind of cultivate these thought patterns. And really, I think there are survival skills that get so ingrained that it's very difficult to unlearn them.
That makes sense. And I appreciate you sharing that because I think that that background helps, at least it helps me better understand how some of these behaviors and worldviews are shaped. And I think it also on my end allows me to understand how I can be a bit more empathetic without compromising on some of the boundaries that I would put in place with a person like that, which kind of leads me to my next question, which would be about boundaries. Like, how do we cultivate, or what are some actionable ways we can put some boundaries in place that allow us to really just hold our ground when we're working with difficult clients in a way where we can try to create as much of a win-win as possible, where if I'm kind of like referencing back to at the beginning of this conversation when you said that it often feels like only one side wins in these situations. How can we create some boundaries that maybe get us a bit closer to more of a win-win where you as the entrepreneur are thriving and your client is also hitting their goals?
Yeah. So there's two different types of boundaries. And I'm so glad you brought up that topic because it's so important to figure out both the boundaries that the client is aware of and even more interestingly, the client, the boundaries that the client does not need to be aware of. So mm-hmm. there's external boundaries, which is the idea of, okay, I'm going to say 24 to 36 hours is the range that is acceptable for me to respond to an email. And that's a range where it is a good enough or a very good job, in my opinion, whether or not someone that I work with would rather it be 2 hours or whether they're okay if it's a week. Those are my personal standards. And a lot of my filtering and adjusting is that external boundary set. And that's something I communicate to clients even when I do an intake. And I think that's a very easy way to start setting boundaries is that very first conversation. So this person knows what you said. And so then you can circle back to say, you know what, remember, it does take me 2 days to respond, or I am going to be out of town the third week of November. Just wanted to let you know that that's when I'll be unavailable. I think that's one very great example of an external boundary. Now, internal boundaries are what I would call the thoughts, the boundaries on when you think about this client. Mm-hmm. For many of us, you find it very easy. In fact, I think one of the first signs of an unhealthy relationship with a client is whenever you're noticing that you think about them more than the other clients that you're working with. They're taking up 25% of your thoughts and your worries and your concerns, even though they're one of 30, 40, 50 clients you may have. That's a thought out of balance state. Mm-hmm. And so actually better being able to figure out, okay, how do I make sure that my own internal thought muscles are not getting overly exerted by this person is so powerful. So for example, it may be that you actually set aside time to only focus on this client's workload and whatever you're doing with that person, and you keep it pretty rigid. So you think about them for a set amount of time and you put it out there and you make it something that's very apart and undistracted, but then you make sure that you actually discipline your mind to not let it become the only person that you think about. That's a very simple thought boundary that is so powerful because it'll help you not run yourself ragged. Another thing is setting out your own clear expectations for yourself of the standard that you're working with. So even getting down to the details of what you're trying to accomplish with this person and reminding yourself of those truths. So, okay, I am 2 weeks into this project. I'm actually on schedule. I'm even a little ahead of schedule. Even though this person may not like what I'm doing, I know that objectively I'm doing a good job. And then being able to find peace in that truth and that kind of basic thought boundary of we are on course. And that's something that you can either communicate to the client, but oftentimes you don't need to. This is just your own internal battle with kind of the little voice in your head that's forming from this toxic client or this difficult client. So those would be a couple examples of things I would encourage people to do is guarding your own thoughts and your own emotions so that you're not letting this one person kind of dictate your emotional state from day to day.
I really love that advice. And I'm like fascinated by this idea of thought boundaries, because I think, especially in the creative industry, we talk a lot about external boundaries. We talk a lot about things like setting office hours, having an autoresponder, you know, for your email account, you know, not maybe giving your phone number to every client, like all these kinds of like tangible things we can do to create these boundaries externally with our clients. But this idea of how to create internal boundaries with ourselves that allow us to protect our relationship with ourselves and also our relationship with others, I think that is such powerful advice, which kind of makes me think about what we talked about back in episode 123, when we were talking about this concept of identity as entrepreneurs. So how does this concept of identity relate to these boundaries that we're building?
So I think one of the biggest ways that you can find a difficult client being toxic, even if they are not that very, very unhealthy person, is whenever you're trying to be something that you are not gifted at. I know that's the case for me. Whenever I'm trying to work with a certain, whether it's a certain skill set, like let's say OCD or OCPD, those are two levels of anxiety-based compulsive diagnoses that I'm just not very gifted at. I know so many good therapists, Bonnie, that are incredibly gifted in those areas. But if I don't know that about myself, if I don't know my skill set and the way I'm designed, just tends to kind of be an effort in futility and caring for someone well, where that's their primary concern for coming to therapy. I'm going to wear myself out. I'm going to become more anxious, more stressed, irritable, however I manifest my unhealth, just because I'm trying to be a round peg forced into a square hole. And so I think when you come to identity, this is something that you can come back to over and over and over again. So for example, whenever you know your identity, like we talked about in our episode on that, reminding yourself, okay, these are my skill sets. This is when I'm the most alive. And there's a good chance that something about what this person is asking is something that I'm not naturally. So it may be that you're not as administrative as this person's wanting you to be. You're more the creative type, or you're not as creative. You're more administrative and task oriented. And so whenever they're asking for all these opinions that you're not naturally gifted at, you're trying to force yourself into being something that is not your design and therefore takes more of your emotional energy. I think it's really easy whenever you have a lot of clients in the row, Bonnie, to better pinpoint how you're gifted just by noticing your level of emotional energy after each session or each meeting. So if you notice you go through 5 or 6 meetings and each of those you still have about the same amount of energy afterwards, that sounds like you're probably a very good fit for each other. They are not taking too much emotionally from you and you're not taking too much emotionally from them. If you find that client that is on your schedule and you're already thinking about it 2 days before, or you're finding yourself kind of waking up in the morning a little more sluggish or more on edge, that's a good indication that something is out of sync there. And so being able to better figure out who you are and your skill sets, and even kind of bouncing off of other people's skill sets, like your clients, helps you learn volumes about who you naturally care well for and how you're able to use your gifts to kind of maximize your own personal energy efficiency.
I absolutely love that advice. I feel like that so beautifully illustrates how we can be more in tune with where we shine the brightest and how we can create more opportunities in our work to experience that too. Like, this is a conversation obviously about boundaries and difficult clients, but I don't want it to feel just heavy and negative. And I don't think it has to. I think that there's a lot of possibility and a lot of opportunity for us as creative entrepreneurs to understand that by simply drawing some boundaries, putting some lines in place that allow you to lean into your biggest gifts and hone back to that identity that we talked about earlier, that allows you to do, Josh, just like you were saying, more life-giving work, but it also allows you to serve your clients who are a good fit better. And I get excited about that because I think that that is how we can help protect ourselves as entrepreneurs from that vicious cycle of burnout. I think that when we find ourselves working with people who, even though they have good intentions, are maybe running us into the ground a little bit, or who are taking a little bit of advantage of your generosity, it can be very exhausting and really wear us down. So this idea of really cultivating a level of awareness that helps you stay in tune with what makes you feel alive in the work you do is so, so powerful. But all that to say, I'd be wondering if you would be open to like potentially talking through a little bit of a scenario and kind of like help me troubleshoot this for those listening.
Sounds great. Go for it.
Awesome. Okay. So let's say that you're working with someone who maybe they aren't as toxic as, you know, kind of the more dramatic situations that you've been sharing here. But let's say it's someone who, they're going through something, they're having a hard time, and you can tell because one email you get is really kind and appreciative, but the next email you get is kind of all over the place. It's short and curt, and maybe they aren't speaking so nicely to you. How do you, in a professional way, get that relationship back on track, or can you?
Well, it's a great example, and there's two things you can do. So first, we're going to talk about the thought boundaries, okay? Mm-hmm. And how do you reframe those thoughts that you're interpreting from those kind of sporadic and all over the place, even sometimes hurtful emails? The second place we're going to go is how you actually can address that with the person. So the first thought is actually, I think, beginning to storytell a little bit in your mind. It's going to be very easy, Bonnie, for any of us, particularly being high achievers, highly relational people, to whenever we hear an email that's a little passive aggressive or just outright hurtful, to interpret it as, oh man, I'm not living up to this. I'm not cutting it. I'm making mistakes, or I'm not doing enough. Oh no, what if I fail? Those kinds of thoughts. But does that really say anything about the person who sent the email? Or is that saying something about me? I think it's going to say a lot more about my own insecurities and my own fears of wanting to achieve and wanting to do an excellent job with whichever client I work with. So the first place is actually reframing this to where you're actually going to pick a story based on what you know of this person to better project what may be going on in their world to cause this type of email. Now, there's going to be times where there is something that you did that you could have done better, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about why this person sent an email that was in many ways unprofessional or at least overly harsh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Trying to put yourself in that person's shoes of, okay, they're going through a very rough time in their marriage, or they're going through a new transition in their job. What's going on in their life? How much sleep do you think they're getting? How well are they doing when it comes to their own stress level? How many cups of coffee have you had them drink or seen them drink, even just when you're on the phone or a video session with each other? What is their world like? And trying to put yourself in their shoes to better understand any painful points, any coldness, any loneliness. I think one of the big things I find is almost never in life when you receive an email like that, are you the only person that's received that type of email? In fact, if they sent an email to someone that they've hired professionally, then they will have definitely sent even harder, even more harmful emails to other people in other parts of their life, their relationships, romantic, familial, whatever it may be. And so starting to reframe those thoughts and giving yourself a little time to process it, reframe it to what may be going on in their life, and then setting a boundary of, you know what, I'm going to be at peace that I think this is partially going on in their own life, and I'm not going to give it any more thought. I'm not going to ruminate, and I'm going to move forward doing what I know is a very good job. So that would be the first thought. The second thought then is kind of, how do you bring it up? And Bonnie, I'd be curious, what are some just practical phrases or sayings that you've said whenever you've received a hurtful email or someone toxic kind of interacting with you?
Well, honestly, when I receive anything like that, and I'm very grateful that this is something that over the years I have learned how to handle in a way where it's not as upsetting or as emotionally draining or, you know, this big shock to my system as it was when I was, younger in business, I guess. Sure. I have really learned that for me, I'm better able to handle those situations when I first give myself the permission to read the email once and feel all the feelings. So I can be indignant, I can be upset, I can be sad, my feelings can be hurt, whatever. I feel the feelings and then I take a deep breath and I take the emotion out of it. Not to be like heartless or cold, but to just be like, okay, let's look at the facts. So this person said this, or that they're feeling this way, or that they're perceiving the situation in this instance. Okay, is that true? Is there anything that they are saying that is rooted in truth? If that is true, if I am finding that they're maybe giving me really harsh feedback, but at the heart of what they're trying to say, yes, there's some validity to that. I can say, okay, so that's a valid point. I don't agree with how they communicated that to me, but I understand the root of where they were coming from. So I try to really only focus on the facts, and then I reply in a way where I am only focusing on the facts. So I always focus on sending emails, especially if someone has shared a lot of like really overwhelming information with me, or they have sent an email that was not as kind as it could be. I still take that opportunity to take the high road and be professional and still serve them without becoming a martyr and without bending over backwards to make them happy. So what I do is I always thank them for their email. I always thank them for the thoughts they shared with me, even if they weren't nice thoughts, because I want them to still understand that I hear them. Just because I hear them doesn't mean I have to agree with what they say. That does mean, though, that I am validating you on a basic human level, and I respect you in some way. And then from there, I dive into just the facts of our exchange so that I can bring them back on board to the facts. Most of the time when I'm receiving an email that is not kindly worded or is maybe a little bit intense, a lot of the time, if I were to respond with kind of an emotionally based rebuttal. Like if someone says like, oh, I hate the way that you designed this, it was ugly. And I came back and said, well, that hurt my feelings. And I actually think what I did was great. And you're mean. That would just escalate the conversation. That actually wouldn't be a conversation anymore at that point. I think it'd pretty much just like be a fight via email, which is a little ridiculous. Oh, cool. So instead, I focus on gently trying to point my client back to what the facts of the conversation are about. And wherever possible, I also lean on some external boundaries that I have in place in the form of client agreements, where if they're asking for me to go above and beyond and maybe do something that's way outside of the scope of the work that we agreed upon, then I just gently point them back to the contract. And the great thing about that is the contract gets to be the bad guy, not me. So all that to say, I really just focus on taking the emotion out of it and focusing on the facts. And I often find that when I'm focusing on the facts, my client then replies with a pretty level-headed factual email as well. It's something where I think that if we can be focused on preserving the integrity of that professional relationship, both of us will feel as though we are experiencing more of a win. In my case, I don't feel like I'm letting someone walk all over me, and I also don't feel like I am giving into some emotionally charged drama. And on the client side, they see that I'm still working hard and I'm still going, you know, giving it 100% whenever I can in order to bring their vision to life if it's branding work or something along those lines. So that's my approach. But I'd be curious to hear, in your opinion, what you would recommend.
Well, I love what you said right there. And I think it's important to just notice all the different ways that you cared for that person, for who they were, not necessarily the specific words that they sent in that email, text message, whatever it may be. I think that's actually probably one of the number one mistakes that I see clients and business owners alike make, is they send emotional emails or emails that have any emotional component to them. One of the best ways to say something much more hurtful, Bonnie, than you ever intended, is by bringing up a tender subject on something like text or email. Mm-hmm. You're losing all the context. And for most of us, whenever we hear an email that's going to have any level of aggression, it sounds two or three times worse than it was even intended in the moment. So actually, one of the first things I encourage people to do is, man, whenever you get an email like that, you know, the one that goes on and on and kind of brings up all of these ways that you feel like you're falling short or this person feels like they're judging you, is actually kind of taking a moment, like you said, feeling all the different emotions, and then picking up the phone or emailing them back. I really appreciate you sending this. I think this would be better for us to talk over the phone. Most people, particularly people that are in those last two categories, will be so much more gentle and receptive when they hear the warmth of your voice. And so actually the battle feels half won whenever I'm able to get someone on the phone and be like, man, you sent this email. I want to hear a little bit more about what you're saying. And this is how I care about you. This is how I care about the product that we're working on together and moving forward with that. If you could just muster up the courage, because I know it's going to be scary. It's mm-hmm. going to be so scary to pick up the phone, because what if they're actually even worse? But 9 times out of 10, probably more than that, you're actually going to hear the person on the other side. Not the judgment, not the terse words, whatever it came across in the email. So that would be one of the first things I'd encourage people. Another thing as well is whenever you do pick up the email, whether it's emailing them back or on the phone, is like you said, being able to acknowledge exactly what happened. Sometimes that's an apology. I love what Starbucks teaches all their employees of the latte approach, which is the idea of first listening, then A, acknowledge, T, take action, thank the customer, and last one, E, explain why the issue occurred. I think that kind of just rhythm of latte, of first listening to them, acknowledging, yeah, this could be an issue, or yes, this is what the contract says. Then taking action, this is how I'm going to care for you, or these are the options for how I'm going to care for you. And then thanking them that they emailed, that they responded, that they care enough to actually bring it up to you. Plenty of people don't have that courage to bring up to someone they've hired issues or concerns they have. And let's be honest, isn't it so much better to have someone that is actually going to be forthright with what they're saying, even if it's in a kind of emotionally charged or inappropriate way, rather than months or years later seeing the negative Google review or the fact that you didn't get any referrals from that person because they kind of withheld their low opinion. So those would be a couple of the directions I would encourage people to go. And there's a lot more other ways, but those would be two great starters.
Those are great recommendations. Something that you just said about the Google review actually sparked a question in my mind of, like, when I think about so many incredible entrepreneurs out there who are in the midst of a difficult client situation, it can be intimidating to work up the courage, like you said, to have that conversation, to invite them on the phone, to email them back. You know, it can be intimidating to put yourself in that seemingly vulnerable position, because I think a lot of people are already feeling at that point like the worst is going to happen. Like they're telling themselves a story in their mind of, if I reply to the email or if I hop on the phone call, they are going to be mean to me and I'm going to get my feelings hurt and I, you know, am not going to live up to their expectation. And even when it's all said and done, after all this emotional like effort and energy and all my hard work, I'm still going to get the bad review. I think that a lot of people believe that when we take these big steps and when we take proactive action to create these boundaries, that we are going to get some kind of backlash. And I would love your thoughts on what we can expect realistically. Is there truth in that, or do we need to be more honestly realigning our expectations and putting these boundaries in place with reality?
I think whenever you're talking about the expectation of the possibility, you're looking at the 0.1% of times that this happens. It's called catastrophizing. Whenever we look at the chance that we lay it out there, that we care for this person well, with boundaries, but still really kind of push ourselves towards that high level of achievement, and then you still get hit in the end. It does happen, Bonnie, but it is so rare. Like we talked about in our last episode, where we can only hear 20% of the negative, or the negative, even though it's only 20%, outshadows the good, that 5-to-1 ratio. I think that's something that we can easily do with exactly what you're talking about. There will be times where we'll all get negative Google reviews or Facebook or whatever it is. But most of the time, that's not the case. Most of the time, that's our inner fear of catastrophe that is made to keep us alive, that's over-dramatizing and overreacting to the very low percentage chance. Personally, I kind of joke that I've made this life rule that I won't worry about something that has less than a 2% chance of happening, because I can run myself, Bonnie, ragged with fears and concerns and things like that, that most likely are very rarely or never going to occur. And guess what? I'm not actually even protecting myself from that happening. I'm just working myself up emotionally and wearing myself out over something that most likely is an act of futility. It's either not going to happen or there's no way I could stop it anyway. And so I think that's one of the areas that we can even create other thought boundaries of. Could you get a negative review? Absolutely. But the chance is so much greater that you can choose to live in life, and you can choose to live in success, or you can choose to live in the catastrophizing of the less than 1%. I know I choose life.
100%. And I think that when I find myself in a similar thought pattern, because we all experience those thought patterns in different ways of we fear a certain outcome and then it just like it's blown up in proportion in our minds and it like feels like it's looming large over your entire life and you just don't know what to do. When I find myself in those situations, like in this example of, you know, being afraid to draw the boundaries because you might get the bad review. Honestly, when I think about it, I would rather still draw the boundary and get the bad review, yes, knowing that I did what I needed to do to set future client relationships up for success, but more importantly, knowing that I did what I needed to do to protect myself and be the happiest and healthiest version of myself. Because I really believe that as entrepreneurs, if we are filling our cups first, if we are caring for ourselves and empowering ourselves to be the happiest, healthiest, most wholehearted humans we can be, that just overflows into the relationships around you. So I love when you phrased it in this way of choosing to live in life, because 100% I'm on board with that. Sign me up. So from here, I would love to know what kind of encouragement you would share to someone who is listening today and they are thinking, heck yes, sign me up. I want to live in life. I want to draw these good boundaries externally and internally. And I want to truly remove how I am viewing myself and how I'm experiencing negative emotions in regards to toxic and difficult professional relationships. What kind of encouragement would you share to that person?
One of the places I would start with encouraging people is just recognizing that this is something that we all wrestle with. It is universal to have someone in your life that is particularly difficult or even toxic. And so that is not something that says anything about you. That's kind of the idea for many of us. We may have experienced some level of bullying junior high and high school, and sometimes that almost feels like it continues into the adult professional life. Bullying is universal. Toxic people in difficult situations are universal. So starting with that place of, this is one of the people in my life right now, and I am going to learn something about myself from it. I'm going to learn how to set boundaries, and I'm going to try to learn what helps me be able to navigate these interactions well and these relationships well. Bonnie, I think that's one of the areas that you can learn more about yourself from a difficult person than you can four or five people that may be particularly healthy. We tend to gain the most level of introspection and insight into ourselves when we figure out, man, this person seems to really be getting to me for some reason. I find myself being more charged emotionally than I normally feel. I wonder what's there. If you treat this as a ability to reflect, as a lesson to grow from and to gain more insight into yourself, then it becomes less about this person hurting you and more about, I'm going to learn why I have a chink in my armor, why there's a hole there that seems like people can poke through. And so even just starting with that of starting to reflect, meditate, maybe journal a little bit on why this person is affecting you the way they are. Because there's plenty of other people in your world that may be difficult or even toxic for other people, but they're not for you. That's where your armor is strong, where you have your shield up, and you know what? They can kind of throw their zingers and it just bounces off. What is it about this person that causes the struggle? So being able to identify the places that are there, you'll gain a lot of insight for yourself. And then from there, being able to better figure out, particularly Bonnie, if it's a person that you're not going to set a major boundary, like I need to refer you to someone else, or I can no longer work with you, or we're going to have to do something like, you know, part ways relationally, whatever that is. For most of us, those aren't the situations. And so then you can learn, how do I set boundaries on, like you said, sticking to the contract, and also boundaries on myself being able to take care and do self-care so that this doesn't drain me. For example, I've known a lot of people where when they're working with a difficult client, they set a 30-minute break later, or they make sure whenever it's presentation day with that person, that they're going to do a movie night with their spouse or with loved ones that night so they have something to look forward to. The chief way to be able to kind of wash the toxicity off of you is joy, is fun, is excitement, is being able to look forward to the other end of things. And so that'll be one of my encouragements as we talk through this, is this doesn't have to just be heaviness or just boundaries. There can also be a high level of excitement about learning more about yourself and recognizing, okay, when I'm dealing in difficult seasons, I'm going to plan joy in my life. I'm going to plan life so that I can actually thrive, even though this situation may be particularly hard.
That is such fantastic encouragement. Thanks for sharing that with us. And I feel like that beautifully ties in with actually what we're going to be talking about next time, which is all about managing stress as a creative entrepreneur, understanding more of how you're wired and how you can build more self-care into your routine that doesn't necessarily look like, mani-pedis and bubble baths, but things that you can do that will help you manage and hopefully conquer the stress that exists in your life as an entrepreneur. So I think it's going to be another great conversation. It was such a great conversation today, as always. And these are such wonderful little bite-sized episodes that are part of a limited edition series that we're doing that's basically one part business therapy and one part action-based encouragement, all around mental health conversations that truly impact all of us as entrepreneurs, and I would argue as humans. So Josh, thanks so much for hanging out with me again today. And I'm already looking forward to our conversation about managing stress in the future.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for joining me today, friend. Before you go, I would be so grateful to receive your feedback on the Brand Strategy Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, or the podcast in general has helped you grow your brand, I'd really appreciate it if you left us a review in iTunes. Your positive reviews enable the Brand Strategy Podcast to continue to grow and reach like-minded creatives just like you. Plus, I'll be randomly selecting a handful of lucky reviewers each month to receive a little thank you surprise from me in the mail. Thank you for all your support and encouragement as together we pursue building brands with purpose and intention. Until next time, I'm cheering you on from Waco.